be with the Lord, but there's some living to do down here yet, and it's tough. Life is hard, as we talked about last week in the book of Job. He was attacked unmercifully by Satan. Today I want to look at Joseph, who was a man who was done wrong by his family, his own brothers, by the people that should have loved him the most. They're the ones that hurt him the most, and I love this story so much, and I want to just kind of walk through it, kind of a biographical sketch, if you will. The sermon today will probably sound more like story time almost than it does a sermon, and then we're going to share some lessons at the end based on Joseph's life that I think can help us when we're dealing with people in our lives that we thought loved us, or who should love us, or who should be treating us a little better than they do, but they've done us wrong. So the first thing I want you to notice about the life of Joseph is that he was abused by his brothers. They hated him. Here's what it says in Genesis chapter 37, verse 4. When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him, could not speak a kind word to him. And his father favored him because he was the firstborn son of Rachel, who was the wife that he loved. And here were Joseph's 10 older brothers. They were jealous because of the special treatment that Joseph was receiving. And they despised him. And the Bible says that they couldn't say a kind word about him. And Joseph worsened the situation by telling them that I had this dream, and one of these days, you all are going to bow down to me. So that was kind of like adding fuel to the fire, and they plotted to kill Joseph. Now, Joseph's father, Jacob, he should have known better, but he said, Joseph, I want you to go check on your older brothers. They're out tending sheep at Shechem. Make sure they're okay. I don't know if Jacob was just naive. I don't know if he was not the sharpest knife in the drawer. I don't know. But he had to understand everything that was going on in the family dynamic. And he sends his son out to the field to check on the 10 older brothers. And Genesis 37:18 says, they saw him in the distance, and before he reached them, they plotted to kill him. Here comes that dreamer, they said to each other. Come now, let's kill him and throw him into one of these cisterns and say that a ferocious animal devoured him. Then we'll see what comes of his dreams. You ever notice that dogs are more, we all know that, dogs are more dangerous when they're traveling in a pack, right? In fact, I think they say that if there's like four dogs that are traveling together in a pack, they're considered very dangerous. And I think the same is true with people sometimes, people who don't have good intentions. And it always seems like when there's a group of people together that are up to no good, they always sink to the lowest level of a participant in the group, and that's what's happening there. And so they start to exaggerate a little bit, and they begin to challenge, and they fear that they're going to lose credibility with their peers. And so in this group, they amp it up a little bit, and awful things can happen when people buy into what's happening in a group like that. And I think that's what's happening here. Genesis 37:23 says, so when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the richly ornamented robe he was wearing, and they took him and threw him into the cistern. Now the cistern was empty, there was no water in it, and as they sat down to eat their meal, they looked up and saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead. Now, to show how corrupt these brothers were, they beat up on Joseph, they throw him into a cistern, they leave him to die, and then they sit down and eat. Now, who could do that in that situation, right? They've done this awful thing. I think he's just going to be in there until he suffers and dies. And just a few moments later, they're sitting down and they're having a meal together. But God, many times, and probably some of you have noticed this before, many times God intervenes just at the right time. It might not be the time that we want, but it's always at the right time because God's timing is perfect if we'll just wait, if we don't run ahead of God. Now, to a lot of people, it would seem like it was a coincidence that the Ishmaelites were coming by, but I don't believe in coincidences. I think that was a divine appointment from God. If it was a half hour sooner, probably would have missed Joseph. If it was a half hour later, they would have missed Joseph's brothers. But God is never late. And so they sold Joseph to the slave traders. In Genesis 37:26, we read this. Judah said to his brothers, "What will we gain if we kill our brother and cover up his blood? Come, let's sell him to the Ishmaelites and not lay our hands on him. After all, he is our brother, our own flesh and blood." And so his brothers agreed. And so when the Midianite merchants came by, his brothers pulled Joseph up out of the cistern and sold him for 20 shekels of silver to the Ishmaelites, who took him to Egypt. So we've got 10 brothers. We've got 20 shekels of silver. Each brother gets 2 shekels. So think about this for a moment. That's what each brother got out of the deal. 2 shekels of silver. They were willing to sell their brother to complete strangers who they had no idea what was going to happen. Now I want you to put yourself in Joseph's shoes for a moment. You think you've been hurt by people. In fact, raise your hand if someone has hurt you in your life. Just put it up there. Everybody's had someone hurt them at some point or another. And here is this 17-year-old boy. He's always protected by his father. But now his brothers are assaulting him. They attempt to murder him. Then they sell him into slavery, and he's shackled and he's put in a pen. He's having to go to a place and he's going to eat food that is usually reserved for the food or for the animals that needed to be fed. And so he's snatched away from his home, no hope of ever returning. You talk about someone who was homesick. Like David just sang, we're homesick for heaven. Put yourself in Joseph's shoes and imagine how homesick he must have been. His only hope was that somehow his father might come and find him and redeem him in some way. But here's what happened. His brothers, not only did they do this evil thing, they lied about him to cover up what had happened. Here's what verse 31 of chapter 37 says. Then they got Joseph's robe, slaughtered a goat, and dipped the robe in the blood. They took the ornamented robe back to their father and said, "We found this." They didn't care about their father at all, obviously, right? So look what we found. Examine it to see whether it's your son's robe. He recognized it and said, "It is my son's robe. Some ferocious animal has devoured him. Joseph has surely been torn to pieces." Now, Jacob, the father, was absolutely crushed, right? And now, here's this deliberate lie that they are allowing to happen in an attempt to deceive their father. You know, these brothers didn't just say, "Oh, you know, your son is dead," but they arranged the circumstances so that the father would arrive at a false conclusion. You notice that? And some people do that, don't they? They say, "Oh, I didn't really lie. Just didn't tell the truth." You know, well, I don't go along with that. What's one of the worst things, or what's some of the worst things that that a relative has ever done to you? That's where Joseph finds himself. I read a story this past week, an elderly woman killed her son. Here's what the story said. A 92-year-old woman allegedly killed her son in Arizona because she did not want to be sent to an assisted living facility, authorities said. Anna Mae Blessing was charged with first-degree murder, aggravated assault, and kidnapping after authorities found her 72-year-old son dead Monday at their home in Fountain Hills. Blessing hid 2 pistols in the pockets of her robe and shot her son several times in his bedroom. The sheriff's office said in this statement, as the suspect was being escorted from the residence, she made a spontaneous statement to the effect of, "You took my life, so I'm taking yours," court documents said. Well, she's not going to an assisted living facility. She's going to prison. How sad. And I read stories that they happen almost daily of things that parents allow to happen to their little children or their infant children from some druggy boyfriend or husband or family member or something like that. And these horrible things that happen to these family members. And maybe for you, it's nothing as horrible as what I've just read to you or what we read about on the news. But maybe a family member has belittled you at some time. Maybe they have physically abused you at some times. Maybe your parents or your brother or your sister has turned against you or turned on you. At some point or another, the people that you love the most, when they betray you, it doesn't just go away. It scars you for life. It's difficult to get it out of your mind, but here's the deal. Joseph's abuse wasn't over. He gets to Egypt. He's being mistreated by his supervisors. He's taken down to Egypt. He's bought by a man by the name of Potiphar. And on the surface, that sounds like a terrible thing. But he was purchased by Potiphar, and then he was promoted. And you'll see God's hand is in the midst of this as well. This is not an accident. But Potiphar was the chief of the guards. Pharaoh was the king. He was Potiphar was a military man, and he worked for the king, and he was in charge, actually, of putting people to death. And so here's this guy that is usually the one that's giving orders, who's brutal, who is executing people, and he's the guy that buys Joseph. And you think, this is bad news. But God is in the shadows, and he's keeping watch over Joseph, and what seemed like a horrible situation turned out to be a good situation because Potiphar recognized talent when he saw it, and he knew leadership when he saw it, and he was able to delegate authority to Joseph. And here's what happens in Genesis 39:2. The Lord was with Joseph as he prospered, and he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. When his master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord gave him success in everything that he did, Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his household, and he entrusted to his care everything he owned. From the time he put him in charge of his household and of all that that he owned, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. The blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had, both in the house and in the field. Now, here's what we need to learn about this. Joseph, in his situation, he could have just moped around. He could have refused to cooperate. He could have demanded his right. He could have refused to work. When someone gave him orders to do something, he could have said, "No speaka Egyptian." But he didn't. He kept being who he knew God was calling him to be. And he gets to a certain point, and just as he gets to this certain point where he's on top of the world, comes crashing down again. He was tempted and he was falsely accused by Potiphar's wife. We know the story, Genesis 39. Joseph was well built and handsome. And after a while, his master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, "Come to bed with me." Now, the Bible doesn't use this kind of language very often. It doesn't call too many people in the Bible handsome, but they do Joseph. And I think there's four things that made Joseph very tempting to Mrs. Potiphar. One was his physical attractiveness, right? Again, the Bible doesn't use this kind of language often, but it does here. Number two was his impressive success. Everything that he did well. Number three, he was available in the absence of her husband. He was in the house every day. Potiphar was gone, and there's Joseph watching over everything in the house. Fourthly, was he kept refusing her. And that made him a challenge to her. And so there must have been this strong temptation for Joseph. I can just picture this. She keeps coming after him, and she's complimenting him, and she keeps teasing him. You know, you could make a list, a long list of people who have yielded to this type of temptation. There's people in the Bible, Samson, David, Solomon. There's well-known Christians that we've seen throughout the Christian entertainment industry, Michael English. There's preachers like Jim Baker and Jimmy Swagger. Just recently, it's come out that Bill Hybels has been abusing his power for years at Willow Creek Church in Chicago. He's been taking advantage of women for years. They're all coming forward. He resigned about 6 months ago. And then just this past week, the entire eldership of the church has resigned because they didn't handle the situation properly. Sad. There's probably some things like that that go on in the political arena. I don't know for sure. I can't think of any names or anything. That's a joke. You're all supposed to laugh at that, okay? Verse 8 of this chapter says, but he refused. Okay, stop thinking about the politicians who have fallen right now and get back here, okay? But he refused. With me in charge, he told her, my master, he doesn't have to concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns, he has entrusted to my care. No one is greater in this house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you because you are his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God? I like what Wally brought up in his communion meditation, is that our sin isn't always against other people. In fact, at the root, it's not against other people. It's always against God. And Joseph says, how can I do such a wicked thing against God? And though she spoke to Joseph day after day, he refused to go to bed with her or even be with her. Now listen to me. Listen very close on this. Just because you have been hurt badly or something bad has happened to you, just because you don't see where God is in your life, it's not a license for you to do something immoral. People do that all the time. I got to be honest, I was tempted this week. You all know I've got this guitar, right? This guitar that someone gave me. Beautiful guitar, worth thousands of dollars. I could not own this guitar if someone had not given it to me. I couldn't afford it. And I picked it up to play it this week to practice one of our worship songs for the second service, and I dropped it. That's not funny. I don't know who just laughed, but that's not funny. And it cracked. And I was sick. And I thought, it's a good thing I'm not a drinking man, you know? Because that's what people do, right? Something bad happens, we think, well, that gives me an excuse to go do something that I wouldn't normally do. That gives me an excuse to do something that for some reason God's not smiling on me, so I'll show him. I'll go do something immoral. Joseph did not do that. If anyone had an excuse to do what Potiphar's wife was wanting him to do, it might have been Joseph. He could have whined about his situation. He could have whined about being victimized. He could have been so angry at God. He could have been bitter with his brothers, but he kept his faith and he said, you know what? I cannot do this thing against my God. He kept his faith. He kept his purity. And the only thing that he lost in the whole thing was his coat. At this point, Genesis 39:11, one day he went into the house to attend to his duties, and none of the household servants were inside. She caught him by his cloak and said, come to bed with me. But he left the cloak in hand, ran out of the house, and then she falsely accused him of raping her. Joseph did the right thing, and here he is falsely accused. And you look at this story and think, man, where is the justice? And maybe you've been there in your life. Someone's wronged me. God, where yet? Where's the justice and all that? I try to do the right thing time after time after time, and I seem to come up on the short end of the stick. Has anybody been there? Genesis 39:19, when his master heard the story, his wife told him, saying, this is how your slave treated me. He burned with anger. Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. Now you wonder why Potiphar didn't just execute Joseph right there on the spot. He had the opportunity to do that. He had the power to do that. And I can't help but think maybe Potiphar thought that Joseph wasn't 100% guilty in this story. I mean, he knew his wife. I'm going to guess this wasn't the first time this happened. So he just puts him in prison just to save face. But this doesn't make any sense. This isn't justice. Joseph is being mistreated by someone who should have believed in him. He had seen his body of work. But he's wrongly thrown into jail. You ever been to a prison? First time I ever went to a prison, I was an 18-year-old kid. Our softball team in Brazil would play a doubleheader two times a year with the prison at Putnamville because they were in our league. Now, when we played the prison, it was always an away game. And but for an 18-year-old kid, it was a frightening place. I'm not going to lie. You know, we drive in and the gates lock behind you, and you walk in and the gates lock behind you, and they search you, and you empty your pockets, and they frisk you, and they put you through the metal detector and all that sort of thing. And then you go out onto the softball diamond, and you know, you're given this briefing about how to act and this sort of thing. And all of a sudden, the prisoners would come out of the prison, and they would file out onto the softball diamond, and I would see people on the softball diamond at the prison like I'd never seen in Brazil, Indiana. I never saw so many tattoos and piercings and rough looking, but not to say that that's all, you know, awful, but it's not my thing, and I wasn't used to it. And here come these guys, big old guys. It seems like all they do is just like work out. And here's the thing, is they hated their own guys. 95% of the prisoners wanted to see us win, right? And so while we're warming up, prisoners came over to us one time. Guy comes up to our pitcher and says, you know what, I got two packs of cigarettes riding on this game. And our cleanup hitter, if you pitch him inside and you don't allow him to get his arms extended, he'll pop it up every time. They wanted to see us. You let him get his arms extended, boom, you're in trouble. And they wanted to see us beat their guys. It was intimidating, you know. But we start playing. And I'm playing left field, and there's a ball hit the left field. There's a guy on second base. He's trying to score from second base. And I come up, and I had on a Cincinnati Reds jersey. Back then, I liked the Reds a lot, too. And I had on a Cincinnati Reds jersey. And I come up, and I fire the ball home, and I gunned the prisoner down at the plate. And the place went nuts. I was an absolute celebrity. You know, anytime somebody else got on, but you better not run on Cincinnati, he'll gun you down, you know. And I come up to bat and they're like going, Cincinnati. You know, I was like a celebrity. I'm thinking, prison's not all that bad. But we had a second baseman who wore a knee brace that day, and the other guys in the dugout are like saying, go for the knee, go for the knee. He was shook. He was absolutely shook. I don't think he fielded a ball all day long. He didn't get a hit. He was just so nervous. But the best part of the day was when someone would hit a home run, because when a home run was hit over the razor wire fence, the same fence between them and freedom, we always had about 500 volunteers. I'll get it, I'll get it, I'll get it. It was great. But it's an intimidating place. It's not a good place. Joseph was thrown into prison with the dregs of society. Still a young man, his whole life in front of him. But his problems were far from over. People still mistreated him. He was neglected by his friends. But here's what happened. He befriends the warden. Genesis 39:21, the Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. So the warden put Joseph in charge of all those held in the prison, and he was made responsible for all that was done there. The warden paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did. You ever notice that everywhere Joseph went, he was the favorite? You know, he's the favorite of his dad. He's Potiphar's favorite. He's the warden's favorite. We read a little bit later on, he's Pharaoh's favorite. People like Joseph, good man. But still, wrong, bad things are happening to him. While he's there, he's befriended by the Pharaoh's baker. That seems like an odd pairing. The baker and the cupbearer. Evidently, there had been an attempted poisoning in the Pharaoh's residence. And so the cook and the wine taster, they're thrown into prison because they're suspected of the crime. and both had dreams that troubled them. Genesis 40 says Joseph asked why they were dejected. Why are your faces sad today? We both had dreams, they said. They answered, but there's no one to interpret them. Joseph said, don't interpretations belong to God? Tell me your dreams. And so the cupbearer says, well, I dreamed that there were three branches on a grapevine. I took a cluster of grapes, and then I gave it to Pharaoh. And Joseph said, oh, it's easy to interpret that one. In 3 days, you're going to be restored to your position, and you'll give the cup to Pharaoh again. And then he said, listen, when you're restored, now that I've done you a favor, would you do me a favor? I'm in this dungeon unjustly, and I need a pardon, and would you speak to the Pharaoh for me? He goes, oh, sure, I'll do that, not a problem. Well, the baker saw that the interpretation was good, so he said, what does my dream mean? Let me tell it to you. I had a dream too. There was a basket on my head that had three loaves of bread, and the birds came and ate the bread. Oh, bad news, Joseph says. That means Pharaoh's going to lift your head. And when he means lift your head, you're dead. Better get your house in order. And it happened. Just as Joseph said, they're at a birthday party, executed the baker, restored the cupbearer to his place. And Genesis 40:23 says the chief cupbearer, however, did not remember Joseph. He forgot him. But eventually, Joseph was richly blessed by God. Genesis 41:1 says, when 2 full years had passed. Now listen, 2 years! After he makes this deal with the cupbearer, does him a favor, 2 years goes by and Joseph is still sitting unjustly in a prison. I just got to stop here for a moment and say, folks, there's sometimes when things are not right, you just have to sit and wait and be patient for the Lord to do his thing. And that's not easy. 2 years, Pharaoh has a dream, you know, the dream. 7 fat cows come out of the Nile River, followed by 7 lean cows. 7 lean cows eat the 7 fat cows. Pharaoh goes back to sleep, has another dream. Fat stalks of grain come out, devoured by the thin stalks of grain. So he's troubled the next morning. He calls for his magicians to interpret the dream. None of them can do it. And all of a sudden, all of this talk of Pharaoh's dream jogs the memory of the cupbearer, right? He's like, oh yeah, I remember when I was in prison, there was this Jewish boy, Joseph, I think was his name. Pharaoh, this man I met in prison, he interpreted my dreams. Chapter 41, verse 14, so Pharaoh sent for Joseph, and he was quickly brought from the dungeon. He shaved and changed his clothes. Pharaoh said to Joseph, I had a dream, and no one can interpret it, but I've heard it said that that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it. I cannot do it, Joseph replied to Pharaoh, but God will give Pharaoh the answer he desires. Now, did you notice what Joseph does here? And I love Joseph, because here's his chance to say, well, you know what? I've interpreted a dream or two in my day. Just sit back and watch what I can do. He doesn't do that. He says, I can't interpret it, but God can. He could have said, Pharaoh, let's make a little bargain here. All right, if I interpret this dream, you let me out of prison, okay? Let's make that deal before I do anything. He doesn't do that. Joseph just humbly says, I can't interpret dreams. Only God can do it, but he will. He can do it. And so Joseph interprets the dream. And we know that the Bible says there's going to be 7 years of prosperity, followed by 7 years of famine. Better store up during those years of prosperity so that you can provide when the rough times hit. That's it. And all of a sudden, Pharaoh promotes Joseph to the vice Pharaoh of Egypt. And when God gets a hold of a person, when God decides to work in somebody's life, it's amazing how he can take a circumstance and completely turn it around. A circumstance that you think is absolutely disastrous, a circumstance where you think there's absolutely no hope. One day, Joseph is confined to a prison cell. Next day, he's vice Pharaoh of Egypt. Verse 41, Pharaoh said to Joseph, I hereby put you in charge of the whole land of Egypt. No one is as discerning and wise as you. So Pharaoh took a signet ring from his finger, put it on Joseph's finger. He dressed him in robes of fine linen, put a gold chain around his neck. This is what Oswald Sanders says. Joseph lost his garment to Potiphar's wife, but he earned from God the right to a royal wardrobe. Isn't that great? And here's what happened. He's riding through town in the chariot, and all the people are saying, make way. Here comes Joseph, and Joseph is given a family to love. Verse 45 says, Pharaoh gave Joseph the name Zaphnath-Paneah. I personally like Joseph a little bit better than that, but that's the name that he gave him, and gave him a wife. God is blessing him with all of these different things because of his patience. He's freed. He turned down Potiphar's wife, and now he's got his own beautiful wife, and he's got his own sons, Ephraim and Manasseh. About 9 years later, we know the story of how his family comes back. He's reconciled to his brothers, and he's reunited with his father. The famine in Canaan became so severe that the brothers came to Egypt to look for food. And now they run into Joseph, and they have no clue who Joseph is. But Joseph immediately recognizes them as his brothers, and here's what happens. He could have thrown them in prison. He could have had them executed, but he does make them squirm a little bit, you know. He could have tortured them. He could have treated them the way that he was treated. And I think Joseph did wrestle with this. I think he struggled with revenge for a little while. That's probably why he did all the things that he did, and he wanted to test them to see if they were repentant or not. But bottom line is, he forgave them. And he restored that relationship. And I want to share some very quickly three lessons from Joseph's life that you need to write these down. You need to remember these things. There will be times when people mistreat you. Expect it. We live in a fallen world. We're surrounded by people who are sinners. Even Christians are imperfect people. We make mistakes. And you can be totally shocked by that, or you can accept the reality that people are imperfect. And there's going to come a point in time in your life, if it hasn't happened already, it's going to happen. You're going to be wounded in this world. Eric, as you said, you will have trouble. You're going to be wounded. And you can either walk around with a big chip on your shoulder or wear your feelings on your sleeves. And maybe your family has wounded you, but let me tell you something. Your family is not responsible for who you are now. Some of you probably need to hear that today. Your family is not responsible for the actions that you take now. They may have wounded you in the past, but what you do now is up to you. You're responsible for how you respond. Sure, your parents are imperfect. Everybody's had some hurt in their past, but we're living in an imperfect world. You're not a lone ranger in this. 1 Peter 1 says, don't be surprised at the painful trial you're suffering as though something strange were happening to you. It's a fallen world. Expect it. Number two, bitterness will destroy you. Release it. Don't let bitterness eat at you. Don't carry that grudge. People say, I'll get even with you if it's the last thing that I do. I'll see that you'll never do business in this community again. People say things like that. I heard about a bitter wife, bitter with her husband all her life. He passed away and she put on his tombstone, to my beloved husband, may you rest in peace until we meet again. You know, some people never give up. Never. They're going to get even. Follow the example of Joseph. Don't play that game. The Bible says, get rid of all bitterness, rage, anger, brawling, slander, along with every form of malice. Be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving one another, just as in Christ God forgave you. There comes a point in time in your life, folks, where you just have to say, I forgive. I release it. I'm not going to retaliate. And then finally, faithfulness will reward you. Practice it. when life is falling apart, when people hurt you. Satan just loves to get two people into his pit and watch them duke it out, doesn't he? No? He loves to see us retaliate toward one another. He loves to see people dive off into a world of sin because of something that someone did to them. And we can get bitter and we can do that. Or we can forgive the person. We can be faithful to God. We can say, this thing I will not do against my God. You're not hurting the other person when you carry a grudge. You're not hurting the other person when you're bitter toward them. You're sinning against God. And you're hurting yourself. God says, stop it. Stop playing that game. And we just need to trust in the Lord that all things work together for good for those who are called according to His purpose. Maybe there are some of you here today who need to just, where you're at, you need to say, God, I'm letting go of this. Take it. I can't do it on my own. I trust you. I'm going to be patient. I'm going to be faithful. You just need to let that go. Maybe there are some of you here today, you need prayer. Maybe some, it's a first-time decision to say, God, I've never surrendered my life to you, and I'm carrying this grudge, and I'm carrying this bitterness, and I need to let it go, and I want to surrender my life to you and repent of my sin and be baptized into you for the washing away of my sins. Whatever it is that you might need to do today, I'm going to ask you to stand with me, and we're going to go to the Lord in prayer, and if you have a need, come during this song. Father,